Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Welcome back to Today's Issues, American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here. Tim stepped out for the last segment here, so it'll be Ray Pritchard and myself, along with Steve Jordahl, bringing us a few news headlines for discussion and for information purposes. Ray, before we get started back into the news, tell our listeners a little bit about, I know you talked about it at the top of the show, but tell our listeners a little bit about Keep Believing and how they can keep up with you.
Well, if you come to keepbelieving.com, there's a whole repository of free biblical resources there. But as I said earlier, we're coming to the end of the Advent season leading up to Christmas a week from today. And if folks come to keepbelieving.com, we're in a series. We've made a little ebook that's free. People can download a devotional ebook called Christmas Promises. We finished day 18 this morning, The Promise of Transformation. So if people come to keepbelieving.com, click on Christmas Promises, you can download the ebook, and we've got it in three different formats. It's free, and you can join us as we are venturing together, journeying through the promises of God, leading up to the greatest one of all, the promise of a Savior, on December 25th, Christmas morning.
Excellent. So keepbelieving.com, and also they can catch you on Facebook. And maybe, are you on any other kind of social media platforms?
Well, I'm doing Facebook live devotions every morning at 8 a.m. Central Time based on, so you can like read the devotion and then you can watch the live, Facebook live devotion and go from there.
Excellent, excellent. Steve, what you got going on in the news today?
Well, we're sitting watching like everybody else is if they're tuned to TV on all three networks. All the cables, I'm sure, are looking by to see what happens when Michael Flynn steps out of his sentencing hearing in Washington, D.C. We're still waiting for that. I'll have a little bit of details about what went on in the courtroom. But before we do that, let me just say, just kind of breaking this morning, Governor Doug Ducey in Arizona has appointed Martha McSally to replace retiring Senator John Kyle, who replaced deceased Senator John McCain. So the third person to fill John McCain's seat is going to be Martha McSally, just as it happens to be. She will be serving alongside her campaign foe, Kristen Sinema, in the U.S. Senate from Arizona.
Interesting, and they were campaign rivals a few months ago.
They were. It was a hot campaign. They worked hard. It was close. It wasn't resolved for a day or two, I believe, after the voting stopped. But now both of them. And I think also what this does, Doug Ducey is a Republican. This gives Martha McSally a bit of an advantage going into 2020, where she or someone will have to run again for McCain's seat.
Right.
So that's interesting. That's interesting news. So we're reading that the court where Michael Flynn is in recess until 12:30 Eastern time. That'd be right about the time that we get off. I don't think we're going to get much of a result from the sentencing there. Let me tell you a little bit about what went on in the courtroom. When Michael Flynn, who's the former national security advisor to President Trump, when he got there to the court, the Judge Emmett Sullivan put him up on the stand and grilled him a couple times and said, this is your plea deal. You want to plead guilty in light of the fact, and I know you guys talked about it earlier, that the FBI document that talked about the interview with Michael Flynn had some inconsistencies in it. Namely, it said that they had advised him of the severity of what this interview is going to be about, but it's contradicted by the fact that they told him he didn't have to bring a lawyer. All these inconsistencies, the judge wanted to make sure that Michael Flynn still stood by his guilty plea. Mm-hmm. And Michael Flynn said, yes, I do. I stand by the guilty plea. What I did was wrong. I knew going in that you don't lie to the FBI, and apparently he lied to the FBI. Now, there were some more severe penalties on the table. We all know, we have heard at least, about special prosecutor Mueller probe, how they play hardball with their witnesses, and he could have been charged with a whole bunch of stuff if he lifted this guilty plea at the last minute.
Right.
Either he's a man of principle that says, yes, what I did was wrong, even though it was a minor offense. or he doesn't want to get back under the vise of the Mueller probe.
Right.
He is standing by this guilty plea. So we will find out a little bit later on today, Ray, we'll find out whether or not he has to serve prison time. The Mueller team has advised that he not, has told the judge they would rather
bring
he not.
Up, let's jump into that story about how this all began with the dossier. I know you have that story. Let's talk about that.
Sure. So this whole thing revolves around, do you remember the term, the Steele dossier? Ray, do you remember when we were talking about that?
Yeah.
That was apparently somebody gathered some intel about a Trump associate who was maybe being a little more verbose after a couple drinks at a bar in London. This got written up. It turns out that this dossier was actually paid for by the Clinton team. The FBI, in their zeal to get to Mr. Clinton, took it and decided to put it in front of what's called a FISA court. That stands for the
Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. So it's a secret court where you go to get CIA type stuff, where you get warrants for wiretaps and everything. They use this dubious memo paid for by the Clinton campaign to go in front of a court. Now, when they didn't seem to have quite enough with just the memo, so what they did was they leaked it out to a reporter. His name was Michael Isikoff, who worked for Yahoo News. He wrote up a story, and then the FBI took the Steele dossier and the story that they had leaked to Isikoff, and they took it to the FISA court. Kind of an echo chamber where you're reinforcing your data with your own data, but they didn't tell the
circular
judge.
Circular sourcing.
Kind of exactly like this. They didn't tell the judge that all of this. Well, yesterday, Michael Isikoff, the reporter for Yahoo News, was on a podcast of a guy named John Ziegler, and he was talking about the contents of the Steele dossier, and he said, yeah, there are some things in there that are troubling, but in the end, this is what I think about it, and this is cut four.
When you actually get into the details of the Steele dossier, the specific allegations, we have not seen the evidence to support them, and in fact, there's good grounds to think that some of the more sensational allegations will never be proven and are likely false. Based on the public record at this point, I have to say that most of the specific allegations have not been borne out.
Wow. So, Ray, that's the that's the reporter from Yahoo News who broke the first story.
And
that
that's
was
where
leaked.
This whole thing started, right?
That's right. And even he's admitting that the whole dossier has holes all in it from a factual standpoint.
Everything revolves around that dossier. That's how they got the whole Russia thing started, is because they thought they had these actions by President Trump. Now, the dossier had a lot of salacious, some things so salacious we can't even mention them on the air. About President Trump, but they also alleged meetings from between Trump associates and Russian officials relating to building projects in the FBI in Russia, or relating ostensibly to election interference and everything. If a regular court would take a document that was admitted with so many holes in it, and they would probably throw it all out.
Right,
and a FISA judge probably would too. If they knew that it had this many holes, because if it's lying in this part of it, how much can you trust the other part, which is still, quote, unverified?
Right.
You know, this goes to the legal doctrine of the fruit of the poison tree. Mm-hmm. If the tree itself was poisoned, as this document was, if it really was as flimsy, as nothing, as empty, as devoid of any proof as this was, mm-hmm. then how can you trust the whole superstructure that was built upon it? I mean, if the foundation is this bad, how can you believe anything else that has come out of this investigation?
Yeah, that's exactly right, you know, because as you said, Ray, if you misled the court and the whole document, the search warrant, if you will, is all full of lies, basically, or inaccuracies, then it really undermines the entire Robert Mueller probe.
Well, and you know that the investigators went to every length, including Steve, to some of those more bizarre allegations. You know, if they could have found the slightest sliver of proof of that, they would have brought it forward. So for Isikoff to say that, what he's saying is after the mountainous efforts to prove what was in that dossier. Basically, it's a big fat zero. There's nothing there. It wasn't true. It's either lies or just made up fairy tales. And that's where this whole thing started.
Mm-hmm. You know, Ray, you talk about the fruit of the poisonous tree. I did a story yesterday that's up today at onenewsnow.com. There's a poll that was just put out by NBC and the Wall Street Journal that finds that a majority of Americans are starting to think that there was something fishy with there is something to be seen in this Russia-Trump probe. The reason they see it is because it's hammered all the time by a very compliant media, which is completely breathless at every possible allegation against President Trump. And you keep hearing this and you keep hearing this. So what that is doing is that is discouraging voters from thinking that President Trump is a worthy candidate for 2020. The same poll found that only about 30% of voters think that they would vote for President Trump for a second term. So what you have is a fabricated dossier that the FBI and Trump opponents used to start a what he calls a witch hunt investigation against him. And as they keep piling on and piling on without any evidence that the president was involved in any kind of a crime, without any, certainly no collusion with Russia, but they keep piling on and piling on, the public is believing this stuff. And they are thinking that either he is a crook and he shouldn't be reelected, or that he has no chance to get reelected because he's going to be found guilty of something. Right now, the president is so far from being found guilty of anything relating to Russia that it's non-existent on the horizon. They think they may have him on campaign finance things, but that's not even sure. And even if it were,
It has nothing to do with Russia. No. Right? Nothing to do with the collusion question. Right.
And President Obama was guilty of the same thing to a larger degree.
Yes.
And it was a fine. So they're going to have a hard time putting down the president. But that is the fruit of this poisonous tree. It all started with this fake memo.
Right. Exactly. Well, what you got next, Steve?
All right. More breaking news today. The president has agreed to shut down Trump Foundation. It was a charity, and he's shutting it down amid allegations from the New York Attorney General Barbara Underwood, that he used it for personal gain and political benefit.
This is funny.
It kind of is. He didn't really need a whole lot. He took a pay cut to become the president. There are charges that he used. The campaign was used, for example, if a head of state came to New York and they stayed at the Trump Hotel, or to Washington, stayed at the Trump Hotel, they're trying to slip some money under the table to the president.
Yeah, even though the Trump organization changed their policy to where any foreign dignitaries who stay at their hotels, they donate that money back to the Treasury. But the foundation here, this is so ironic because it's the Clinton Foundation that they were doing pay to play. Millions of dollars flowing through the Clinton Foundation, Ray, when Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State, and there's documented favors that were done, diplomatic favors, you know, weeks after the donation was given. So it's ironic that all of a sudden it's the Trump Foundation.
Well, isn't this the classic double standard? We look the other way when the Clintons are using their foundation for all the things you just pointed out, including a lot that is legally suspect, but now you've got the Trump Foundation, so it's going to close down. Well, at least we won't be reading about it on the front pages anymore.
Yeah, and this may have been the simplest thing to do is just shut it down, especially if it's not serving some, you know, massive purpose. That way you do avoid any kind of conflict of interest and things like that. But it's so ironic that the other side, they're guilty of all these same things that President Trump's dealing with here. But they don't have to live by the same standard. But I guess that's nothing unusual.
To which I would add, it's only ironic if it's happenstance. This, I think, is just malfeasance. This is just double standard, pure and simple. They are willing to go after Mr. Trump, and they're not. In fact, you heard James Comey when he came out of this meeting. I know you played that clip earlier. When he came out of his closed-door meeting, he was still aghast that they would still be asking him about the Clinton email probe, like it doesn't matter anymore. It matters because of what you're doing to the president now.
What you got next?
Well, the FBI has helped Italian authorities thwart an ISIS terror bombing that was targeting the Vatican. So they have arrested a 20-year-old man named Mohsen Ibrahim Omar. He's also known as Anas Khalil, and he was arrested at the Aegean seaport city of Bari. And he said the operation was to set off some bombs in churches throughout Italy, and specifically wanted to hit St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican. They have some good security. You probably would have had a hard time even if they hadn't been caught. But the FBI and Italian authorities are thwarting a terror plot by ISIS.
And this has happened a couple times the past few weeks, it seems like.
Well, you heard just, and we might not have heard, but just yesterday or this, maybe late last week, you did hear it because I brought a tape in. It was hard to understand. But the FBI was undercover with a suspected terrorist in Oakland, in the East Bay, and he was plotting about bombing different places in the East Bay. I talked with Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis, who's a Pentagon analyst, the other day, and I noted with him, we were talking about, I don't know, some foreign policy thing, and I said, this narrative that ISIS is gone just because the caliphate is gone is kind of a myth. He says it is. They have just split up. It's a hydra. You now have, instead of one caliphate with one head, you have now a dozen heads in a dozen countries that are each plotting their own action against the West, against infidels, against whoever they decide, for whatever reason they decide. But ISIS, we've had a lot of victories against it, but they're far from gone.
And, reading about this, this fella that they and whoever he was working with was planning on setting off bombs on the 25th. And I'm reading something he wrote to his associate. The 25th is Christmas. The churches are full, talking about Italy. Let's put bombs on all the churches in Italy, and especially plan to plant a bomb inside St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican, which would be jam-packed on Christmas Day. So thank God the FBI was involved with the Italian police in bringing this guy down, because can you imagine the victory the terrorist would have had if they'd been able to pull this off?
Oh, it would have been the biggest thing since 9/11 if they'd actually been able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Hey, what could go wrong here? Scientists at the University of California, Berkeley, are developing a tool that uses artificial intelligence to identify hate speech on social media.
Imagine that.
Can you believe it?
Oh, boy.
This is Berkeley's D-Lab. They're working on cooperating with the Anti-Defamation League on a scalable detection system of online hate to identify hate speech. Now, it's one thing when we say something actually hateful. Someone should be shot or killed, or all whatever group is evil, and for no reason. But the problem is that a lot of times what the left considers hate speech is just basic orthodox Christian doctrine. Like when we say that marriage is between a man and a woman.
Right.
We're stating what we believe and what the Bible has said, what society...
Also, to take a more libertarian view of this, Ray, we already have laws in place that make certain speech illegal. That is, if you threaten bodily harm or injury towards someone, or you encourage illegal activity. I mean, there's already laws and procedures in place. When you go beyond that and take it into your own hands, Ray, that's where the First Amendment starts to get assaulted.
We have a bevy of laws. I mean, you could argue maybe we have too many laws regulating speech in America today. This is a frightening thing to think about using I'm just thinking, Steve, how they would do this. Adjusting the algorithms.
Like keywords.
They are looking for keywords. For example, if they might look at if you use the word homosexual in or gay, that might flag somebody, which would send it over to either another part of the AI to say gay is good, oh, we'll let it pass, or to say gay is bad, and oh, we got to flag it as hate speech.
Right.
It also can be used when if you're just, I've had people report to me that they have been taken down from Facebook, for example, for doing nothing more than tweeting an article out that was written not by the person but by a known outlet like Breitbart that says something negative about a public figure, for example. Where this can go is unfathomable. It's dangerous for our Constitution. Frankly, the First Amendment was put up just so that we could have controversial speech. Right. We wouldn't need the First Amendment if
you know, and all if these, everybody agreed if about everything.
Exactly. Right. And you know, all these platforms have like private settings. Like for Facebook, for example, you can make it to where you have to approve every friend that you have. So people can't follow you unless you approve them. So that means people, you're not going to have random people posting things on your page that you don't like. So Facebook is going beyond that, and they're just doing these blanket rules. And I know this is not Facebook, but to compare something.
It's to help Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So my deal is, you know, beyond banning illegal activity and maybe if you want to get into pornography and things like and related things, but you start going beyond that to these subjective things, that's when the First Amendment starts taking an assault. And we've seen it going on with these media companies.
But you know, there's no more trusted word than UC Berkeley when it comes to you know, speech.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they're very versed on the Constitution, right?
All right. I want to end with this if we could. Ray, do you have any idea how hard it is to be a congressman?
No, Ray.
Oh, Ray, no Ray.
Yeah, he dropped off. I think it must have been the Russians. Or it could have been UC Berkeley.
It might have been Berkeley.
Maybe Ray said a key word that triggered the
maybe
the algorithm.
Maybe he's going to meet your dad somewhere. do you have any idea how hard it is to be a congresswoman-elect?
No. How hard is it?
It's so hard that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says she needs to take care of herself and she's taking some personal time off before she's even sworn into Congress.
Yeah, it's probably high stress, I would imagine.
Well, I don't know, but...
She's probably in her late 20s, early 30s.
She's in her 20s.
Yeah. And so going to Washington as a congresswoman at that age, when you're not used to that, probably high stress level, I would imagine.
Well, here's what she tweeted out. She says, I'm taking a few days to take care of myself before what is sure to be an eventful term. For working people, immigrants, and the poor, self-care is political, not because we want it to be, but because the inevitable, that's the word I'm trying to get, shaming of someone doing a face mask while financially stressed. This is Ocasio-Cortez talking. So I've decided to take, along with others, on IG, I don't know what that stands for, as I learn what self-care even means and why it's important. She's not sure what it means, but she's going to take it. Feel free to comment. I'm sure people are.
Yeah, I mean, this talk about, a national crisis here, and that is we got to do this self-care stuff to get things under control in our country. So whatever Ocasio-Cortez wants to do, that's up to the voters in New York, whether she stays there or not. Self-care, working in D.C., whatever she needs to do, that's up to her.
Was it something I said, Ray?
I'm back now.
Well, hey, Ray, we thought it might be that UC Berkeley algorithm that cut you off.
It just cut me off.
Yeah, maybe it didn't like something you said.
I knew what I was thinking, so it cut me off.
All right, well, appreciate it, Steve.
My pleasure.
All right, thank you, Ray.
Thanks, Walker.
Today's Issues, American Family Radio, is the show. We're wrapping things up here. Stay tuned, Alistair Begg after the break, and then more of American Family Radio.